to sell the nerves. Watch the phone, pull the curtains on my own. Security, and to the car, another flick of a camera. I got yes men surrounding me, and everybody wanting something for nothing. It's the fall of the prodigy, and the press are watching every move. It's all coming back now. Well, it's all coming back to me. Well, it's all.
Okay, and we are live. Everyone, thank you so much for joining me again today for another episode of the Ben Werman Podcast. Super happy to have you here. Today we have Aaron from Essex, aka BTC Essex on Noster and Twitter. And we're really excited to talk about this today because we've had a couple of great value for value musicians on in the past, one of them being Joe Martin from over there in the UK. And they're working on some big things right now. So I'm really excited to dive into the value for value music scene over in the UK, gigs being built around Bitcoin and just the exciting times that are happening. So Aaron, thank you so much for joining me, man.
No, it's great to be here. Thanks for entertaining me. I'm going to give you a right good talking to, Ben.
That's what we love here, man. That's what it's all about. So I would love to start with, as I was mentioning before, we always like to have the stories that everyone has of how you found Bitcoin. And we were also talking before how you had some parallels with Daniel Prince, one of my previous guests, both of you growing up in the same part of England, and you just live just down the street from each other now. So why don't you give us your backstory and how you went through this crazy world ending up at Bitcoin?
Yeah, so my name's Aaron. I'm 46 years old. I'm a married father of two girls. They're both teenagers as well, which is why I've had to come into this room, because since they've got home, the internet's just gone, like, been sucked by all their devices that they've connected. But I've been in Bitcoin since 2017. I probably discovered it 5 years before that. I used to be an avid watcher of Max Keiser's Keiser Report, and saw it, you know, when he was shilling things like Maxcoin and Startcoin and all of this, and I didn't really understand it. But what I did love was Max's, shall we say, alternative point of view when it came to mainstream media. You know, nobody would say boo to a goose on telly over here about anything. But there he was ranting and raving about the banksters and, you know, the financial crisis and all of that. And I just thought, wow, this guy, he's exposing the scam. Do you know what I mean? And this was on RT, which was a channel that I think we could get on cable over here. It's since been banned. You know, it's since been banned here. But he was actually filming from the heart of London. He was probably in the Gherkin or something like that. He was in one of the buildings on the Thames. And I just thought, like, you know, how ironic. You're broadcasting from London on a Russian TV station. And, you know, I always really enjoyed his reports, because I started working life at 16. I left school like everyone else with all my GCSEs and everything, and I went straight into working in the futures market in the city, because back then you could leave school at 16 and go and get a job. It's like, it's kind of frowned on now. They want you to stay in school to 18, and I think that's to do with, you know, the unemployment numbers making them look better. Do you know what I mean? So but that's another story. So I started working in the futures exchange at 16. Daniel, I want to say maybe 1 or 2 years older than me. So he would have been commuting from Rayleigh. Rayleigh's another town in Essex. I live in Southend. So he would have been commuting into London. It's about an hour and a half, you know, from the financial capital of the world at the time. We're talking like 1995. And I used to have to sit on a coach for like 2.5 hours just to get into London. So it was hell. But as a 16-year-old, you know, you're getting your first pay package and all that. And I'm wearing this oversized suit that I've not quite grown into yet. I was like something like Tom Hanks from Big, you know, when he changed from like the big guy to back to the little kid wearing the suit. So it was like, you know, it was an amazing time, like the mid 90s. And that was like really when that was because I've been reading, I've been watching a lot of stuff about just recently about, you know, with Trump's tariffs and everything. And it was in the mid 90s where Bill Clinton came in, welcomed, you know, China into the G7. And really, that's where a lot of our problems, kind of fiat problems come from, as like manufacturing was like, it wasn't just offshore from America out of China, but Britain was the same, you know. So, you know, the mid 90s was a very prosperous time. I remember I was with my dad. It was just me and my dad living at home. I had elder siblings. They'd already left, and we'd moved into a little bungalow. And that little bungalow was, I think he paid 53 grand for it at the time. Where it is in Benfleet, I believe that bungalow has just sold for about 450 grand now. So that's 9x in 30 years, basically. That bungalow's gone up. So I used to get on a train and commute into London, you know, that all changed for me. Where mine and Daniel's paths changed, because that was it. At 16, once you got a job in the city, I was surrounded by like unbelievable wealth. You know, lots of guys earning thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of pounds a day, you know, trading. And, you know, I wanted to be one of those guys. But regulations and laws wouldn't allow me to become a trader until I was 18. So I spent 2 years on the floor as a runner, you know, like a clearing clerk. You see the old pictures from like Wall Street where everyone's in the coloured jackets and they're all screaming and all that. That was the futures exchange. That was where I used to work. So it was, you know, it's a real kind of exciting, you know, for a 16-year-old, it was a really exciting place to go and be part of. But unfortunately, during that time, I contracted a killer disease called meningitis. You may have heard of it. In the 90s, it was unheard of. It was another one of these diseases that no doctor had ever seen before. And the complications with that was I got meningococcal septicemia. And what it did to me was it kind of makes your body self-destruct. So as I was at home during the day, I phoned up work in the morning complaining, you know, I'm really poorly. I just felt like I had the flu, you know, like no energy. I was hot 1 minute, cold the next minute. But it was just me on my own at home, and my dad wasn't around as a 17-year-old, so it's just me and the dog. And I'm literally sitting there, and my body's shutting down. Like, so I get up at 7 o'clock in the morning, and by say I don't know 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm sat at home trying to watch telly, trying to eat. I'm losing hand eye coordination. I go and play my Sony PlayStation, but can't figure out how to move the guy from there to there, but just dismiss it. My brain's dismissing it because the meninges is the lining of your brain, and it pulses. And I guess when you get an infection of the brain, it just sends out mad signals all over your body. And unbeknown to me, what was happening, I was getting blood poisoning in my legs. So all of my legs were turning blue as this blood, I guess, the heart is just pumping the blood and it's just pumping too much. And it's just leaking from the arteries just into the tissue and slowly killing the tissue. And you'd think, you would look at yourself, and I'm looking at my arms and I'm looking at my legs, and I'm like, my legs are becoming sore to touch. But the whole time, the virus, or the no such thing as viruses, the whole time the bacteria is telling me, yeah, sorry, you don't be able to put that on YouTube now, are you? The whole time,
everything on YouTube. Sometimes it gets cancelled, but we always try.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know what you mean. So I'm sat there, literally dying, trying to watch telly. I'm trying to have a nap. I think, I know, I'll pass the time, because when you're ill, it's horrible, isn't it? You don't want to eat, you don't want to do anything. I think to myself, I know, I'll go and have a bath, try and wake myself up, try to make myself feel better. But while I'm in the bath, I didn't realise that as I'm trying to push myself out of the bath, I've literally got no strength in my arms. I can't even push myself out of the bath. Now, obviously, this is in a time before mobile phones and Google and all of that stuff. But I was still sat next to a landline phone, you know, right next to me. I could have just picked it up and spoke to some, phone my sister, phone my brother, phoned anyone, just said, I'm feeling really bad, you know, can someone come round? And I don't know, whatever. But anyway, long story short, I end up going into Basildon Hospital. My dad gets home from work. He takes one look at me. He says, we're not phoning the doctor. We've got to get you straight into hospital. He drops me off at the door. And while he goes to park, at this stage, I can barely walk. You know, my strength has just completely disappeared because of all the damage which is happening inside my body. And while I go inside, a nurse sees me, comes and grabs me. She comes and grabs me, puts me in a wheelchair, takes me in. I go straight into observation theatre. And my dad then, he's like, thinks, well, where is he? You know, I haven't gone through triage, so no one's taken my name. No one's taken my name at reception. So my dad's there. I've just dropped my son off. He's really ill, but they've got no record of me. Do you know what I mean? So he spent a few frantic minutes panicking, thinking, where the bloody hell is he? Eventually they find me, and I'm conscious throughout this whole thing, but unbeknown to me, I've got like, you know, you're hooked up to all the machine where they go, beep, beep, and I'm having plasma put inside me. And it's, you know, there's been a few lucky things that happened in my time. And 5 days before that, I'd actually been at an Oasis gig in London. And it was one of the biggest indoor gigs of all time. And the thing is, with meningitis at the time, they believed it was extremely contagious. As what we now know is that meningitis, it's only really an ear, nose and throat virus. You can only catch it through being in water or, you know, sharing a drink or, you know, maybe sharing a kiss with someone. It doesn't live in the air. Like most things, it doesn't live in the air. It needs like a carrier. So the hospital then all of a sudden started to panic as they're piecing it together, thinking 25,000 people were in a room with me a couple of days ago. So they're thinking, oh my God, this could be a contagion kind of event, you know. And obviously it's in less than 24 hours it completely decimated my body. Like I'd gone from, you know, being at work in the futures exchange the night before to the next day barely being able to walk and just having all my strength and energy, everything zapped from me. Anyway, I spent 7 days in intensive care. Eventually the treatment kind of worked. Luckily I was fit. I was a fit young man, so I used to play a hell of a lot of football back in the day. They kept telling me to drink. I was like having mad hallucinations as I was on morphine. I was on this drug and that drug. I was pumped full of everything. But eventually, 3 months later, I finally leave hospital after having like multiple skin grafts on my legs and things like that. And then I had the misfortune to then try and go back to work. Do you know what I mean? Which was horrendous, really, because I kind of rushed myself back to work. Being a kind of team player, I was always felt very guilty that I'm kind of sat at home still getting paid, still getting bumped my salary, while all my, you know, team were still working hard in the city, you know. Not that I think I was probably on £7,000 a year, you know, as a 16-year-old, it's a fortune. But knowing what I know now, it's peanuts. You know, some of these guys would earn 7,000 quid in one trade in a morning. Do you know what I mean? It was absolutely nothing to a bank in the city. So, during that 3-month period that I had off, it was a real, you know, you go through these near death experiences. And I realized then that my life had changed forever. I was never going to ever going to have the same perspective on anything ever again, because in my mind, and it took a good couple of years, Ben, do you know what I mean? It took a couple of years to really get over the disruption in your life. You imagine 17, you're in hospital, you're disabled essentially for quite a few months. I had to learn to walk again. You know, I had to go through all this like heart adversity. And at the same time, a lot of the guys that I was working in the city when I went back during that 6-month period, they'd all progressed on the next stage. They'd all become traders. They was all, you know, earning the big money, going out for champagne breakfasts and things like this. And I was just struggling just to continue my job and get through the day. It was a real kind of life-changing moment to go through, because like I say, your perspective changes forever and you never ever look at anything the same again, you know. So whereas I had to deal with all of that, someone like Daniel Prince obviously went on through, you know, did all his trading, you know, became quite successful, and that was my pathway. But then I had to kind of reinvent myself completely. About 4 years after my illness, I had a family member, Lee Stafford. There might be some people listening to him who know him. He's a very famous hairdresser in the UK in the 90s. He was on TV all the time. And I just got the thing of happiness, because whereas I'd been through all that, I'd been through all that emotion and mental trauma and stress working in the city, I couldn't get the buzz back for working in the city. It depressed me. The idea of standing on a freezing cold platform at 6 a.m. in the morning to get on the train, to commute to London, you know, to do your typical 9-to-5. So I had all of those feelings at like 20, 21 years old. But then I looked to my cousin, and I started being friendly with a few of those guys and hanging out with them, going down the pub and stuff. And every single one of them, Ben, couldn't wait to go to work every day. They were so happy with what they were doing and the people that they were touching their lives and making them feel good every day, you know, because it's a very intimate thing being a hairdresser for men and women. You know, you can really kind of like tap into somebody and you can make them feel amazing. Do you know what I mean? And I had this vision of, well, there must be something in that I'm like, it was almost like a split personality thing. You know, it was like that was old me and now this is new me and I'm looking to be happy. That was all. It wasn't. Working in the city, the ambition is fast cars, Lambos, earn thousands of pounds before breakfast and go home for lunch and go, you, do you know what I mean? And there's all that bravado and all that thing. And I was up for that. I was signed up. I was in there. That's what I wanted. That's what all my family wanted. I was going for it. Do you know what I mean? I was in position to do that for the next 10, 15 years. 20 years of my life or whatever, you know, because working in the city in that fast-paced environment, it's a young person's game and people do retire, you know, quite early. Do you know what I mean? I guess they make a lot of money, whether it's making a lot of money and getting out or whether it's burnout or alcoholism, because I saw a lot of that as well. But at the very same time in 97, this was when, you know, obviously New Labour got into the UK and things started changing politically, and the fiat world started really ramping up, you know, how they were changing everything. And, you know, they were pushing everybody to go to university and get a degree. And all of a sudden, people now haven't spent £10,000 a year on university fees, whereas that wasn't a thing before. Do you know what I mean? So the fiat, the ugly head of fiat really started kind of like coming out. And, you know, the Tories who were in before Labour had actually left, you know, quite a solid economy, you know, with money in the treasury, with lots of. And then Labour came in for 13 years and spent everything and more, and famously sold all of the gold at like $200 an ounce as well, you know, at the bottom in like 2001 or whenever it was. And, you know, the ugly head of fiat starts from like that period of time. So whereas Daniel would have gone on and, you know, had a successful career in the city, there's me having to start again at 21 as a trainee hairdresser, you know, looking for happiness. That was it. And, you know, only the second time, and there's no regrets. You know, I've been a hairdresser for 20 years, best job I've had. You know, I'm lucky that I've done loads of celebrities, loads of A-listers. I'm what's called a session hairdresser. So I do a lot of magazines. I do a lot, well, not that there's many magazines left anymore, but I do a lot of catwalk shows. I do a lot of like movies, music videos and things like that. And yeah, it was an amazing like couple of decades doing something that, you know, your life changes. You know, you get a certain hand of cards dealt to you, and you just have to deal with it. So yeah, it was that pursuit of happiness which came after my illness, which has only really been replicated by discovering Bitcoin as well. And like I say, you did ask about when I got into Bitcoin. Well, yeah, I discovered it through Max Kaiser. And even though we'd gone through the financial crisis, it wasn't really, it did affect me massively because our session career was gutted, because the first thing that any business kind of do is they tend to cut advertising budgets. And when you're doing hair for all these different campaigns and adverts and things like that, you know, they get cut and they go and film them and do them in other countries. Or and there was the thing as well that things, technology had moved on as well, so that we'd gone from, like, when I first started my hairdressing career, we was using film, you know, filming cameras, where they would take a Polaroid and test it and then shoot it, and then it was like fingers crossed. But then obviously digital cameras came in, so all of a sudden the budgets that they would use to get a stellar hairdresser and a great makeup artist, they could now spend that money on Photoshop and they can retouch anything, you know, digitally. So, you know, I suppose that was the first, meningitis was the first rug pull in my life. The global financial crisis was the second rug pull. And then obviously 2020, the COVID has been a third rug pull. So it's like, so I'm 46 now. So in 30 years, every decade, there's, you know, you're going to get the rug pulled out and something that is beyond your control just gets served to you in a way that you're just like, you know, did I see that coming? But where Bitcoin changes everything, because even though I discovered it in 2012, because Max Kaiser, there was no real education about decentralization, finite amount, you know, immutable, censorship resistant. I didn't know what any of those words meant. Do you know what I mean? And no one was really talking about it. They was talking about it still being private. You know, you can do private anonymous transactions back then. So of course, like everybody, you dismiss it. And I lost my father in 2012, and I was given a little bit of an inheritance. And I said to my father-in-law, I'm thinking of putting this in this thing called Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin at the time had been $1,000, but it crashed to $200. I'm thinking this might be around 2013, 2014, when my inheritance come through. And I downloaded a wallet onto my laptop, got my card details and tried, but I couldn't seem to make it work. I mean, I know Mt. Gox was a bit, I might be getting my dates a bit mixed up. I mean, because it was a blockchain wallet. I can't remember if it's 2014 or 2015. It was around that time. But yeah, 2013.
And it was complicated to do back then. Like, this is what a lot of people don't understand is that, you know, people, everyone's going to be kicking themselves, oh, I wish I would have done it X years ago. And you had to be like highly technical to be able to even pull this off, because it's much more complicated than just making an account on exchange and buying it like it is now. So
yeah.
People need to give themselves some slack.
100%. Yeah. You know, it was like the majority of the people that were earning it were doing it through mining it through their laptop, you know. And I didn't really had, I mean, I'd have, you know, I've got grown up with the internet. I've had a, you know, a Hotmail email address since like 1994. Do you know what I mean? So I've grown up with the internet and I've seen how it all worked. But no, never knew anything about the mining process or anything like that. You know, that was a real kind of elite level kind of person that's in the know that would know all that stuff. So I basically just couldn't make it work, but dismissed it. But I did say to my father-in-law at the time, I said, I'm gonna put some of this inheritance. I'm just put it into Bitcoin, you know. And he said, well, speak to my man Hans. He's my financial advisor. So of course, you know, you get on the phone to him and he's like, no, it's for drug dealing, it's for money laundering, it's for terrorism. You don't want to go anywhere near that. So I'm like, all right. He's like, what do you want to do? You want to give it to me? I'll invest it in these cash ISAs and stocks and shares and all that. And, you know, jobs are good. And I've got this in my ringing in my head from my father-in-law, you know, saying, yeah, you know, I put £8,000 in, I don't know, 1990. And by 2005, it was worth £60,000. I'm like, wow, that's amazing. Do you know what I mean? So why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't I go and put the money with him? It's gonna 10x. And of course, so I gave it to him, and I think I had it with him for about like 3 or 4 years. It did nothing. It barely broke even over the 4 years. And because I was a poor hairdresser and I wasn't a financial city whiz kid anymore, you know, I was kind of taking bits out of it to sustain my lifestyle. Obviously, having a wife and 2 children and a mortgage and all of that, you know, having to kind of like tap into it. And when you're not getting any return, you know, over time, that's just going to disappear completely. But I got to 2017 and we were on holiday. We was in Crete at the time. And I don't know what it was, whether it's divine intervention or what, but I had not given a thought about Bitcoin for 4 years. The last time I checked the price, it was $200. And I go on my phone and I'm on Twitter. I'm lying on the sunbed and I go on Twitter and I'm like, just type in the search bar, Bitcoin. And I think it was Pierre Rochard, was the first person that came up. And all these different accounts came up. And they're all talking about, oh, you know, see who can guess the price by a close of play Friday. And I'm like, yeah, that's a good point. I wonder what the price is. So I Google what the price is. It was about $3,000. And I was like, am I seeing things? Like, I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't understand why. I didn't know what had happened. But the main thing was, you know, I'm watching, I think Max Kaiser's probably been kicked off, you know, or RT's been kicked off British TV by now. So it's not like I'm watching Max Kaiser anymore. And I think, well, what's happened? Like, why is no one talking about this? Like, you know, what's gone on? Why is no one in the media talking about this? Do you know what I mean? Anyway, so with
very,
my final...
Very, very long scam bubble that just keeps getting bigger and bigger every single year, and decades later, it's just still 100% growing.
That keeps bursting, right? Oh, it's, you know, it's Beanie Babies. You know, it's, you know, once it's, you know, a bubble, it's a bubble, you know, but a bubble doesn't reinflate itself, you know, once it popped, and yet this one has. So obviously I started doing a bit more digging and stuff like that. And I got in a DM, I started DMing Pierre Rochard. And I just said to him, you know, I can't even remember what I asked him, but I've obviously asked him about Bitcoin. And he's done one thing. He's just sent me the white paper. He's like, there you go. There's a white paper. Go and check that out. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, Now, I've been a hairdresser for like 15 years, so I'm not used to really reading large technical documents like that. Not that it's technical, but, you know, it peer-to-peer, what is it, a peer-to-peer, you know, money
electronic
cash system. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I read it, but it still didn't really make much sense to me. And, you know, I then carried on talking to Pierre in the DMs, and I was like, but, you know, Max Kaiser was pumping, you know, Max Coin and Start Coin and all that. And like I say, it didn't really respond. It was just read the white paper. And yes, Max is, I think Pierre was a little bit like, yeah, Max is a bit of a scammer or whatever. I don't think he was as deliberate as that, but he was, you know, implying that, you know. So that was really the discovery. And obviously, you know, you buy your first bit. Now, I think I bought 50 quid from Coinbase, like everyone does, or 100 quid from Coinbase. And then I thought, okay, well, that went okay. And then I learned, obviously, about getting your own wallet, taking it off the exchange. And, you know, you go through that rabbit hole. You go down the Bitcoin rabbit hole of then consuming everything. And I think my education when it comes to Bitcoin, it's so important to get in with the maxes. Because it saved me a whole heap of pain, do you know what I mean? So started listening to Max Kaiser, obviously, Pierre, but there was people like Andreas Antonopoulos, obviously, you know, Bitcoin legend. And obviously there was all the Roger Beer stuff as well happening at the time with the Bcash stuff. So you had all the block wars, all of this was happening. So it's quite overwhelming, you know, because it's such a rabbit hole which touches so many disciplines, from individual sovereignty to censorship resistance to, you know, money the government can't control or steal. You know, it touches all of these things and it can be quite overwhelming. But step by step, I bought my first little bit, and then Jamie Dimon comes out and says, you know, if any of JP Morgan's are trading this, you know, I'm going to fire them immediately. It's, you know, it's rat poison. It's trash. It's going to zero. And almost the minute after he says that, Bitcoin price dumped by 40%. Do you know what I mean? But I'm so, and it went down to, I don't know, about £2,000, I think, at this stage. And then I was like, oh, well, I'm just going to buy more. So I just ended up buying more and then started dollar cost averaging in. And I think I put a few thousand pounds in over time. But if there is any newbies out there that have not invested in Bitcoin, just don't DC it. Get all in today, because that's my biggest regret, because I'd have had so much more Bitcoin had I gone all in, because unbeknown to me, I've got in 3 months before the parabolic blow off top of the 20,000, you know, the 20,000 USD in December 2017. So I got in like literally the August of that 2017, as the chart is literally going straight up. Do you know what I mean? And that was my origin story, I suppose. And then, you know, just started writing blogs and created Bitcoin Essex as a resource. And then, like you do, you want to tell everybody about it, your family, your friends, the shopkeeper, the woman behind the counter in the post office. My friends that are working for banks saying, oh, you better, you know, you're going to be out of a job in a few years. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, sounding like an absolute orange peel kind of, you know, nut job, really. But everything I said, like on Facebook, I was putting stuff out there on Facebook, and everyone was, you know, parroting the same multimedia, the mainstream media, you know, oh, money laundering, and, you know, oh, China controls it, and, you know, it's a scam and all that. So, yeah, so that's really my whole story. And then 2017, 2018, I decided to start a meetup. I saw a little poster on a bus stop around the corner to me that advertised the meetup. So I thought, I know, I'm going to go to that. I went there. There was one other guy, and he was a Bcasher as well. So it was a Bitcoin meetup, but he actually was a Bcasher, and he told me that he'd converted all of his Bitcoin into Bcash, and, you know, Bcash was the original vision and all that. And I've not seen him to this day, but yeah, I can imagine he's like kicking himself a little bit on that. Hopefully he, you know, saw the error of his ways and managed to get back into Bitcoin. But for me, when you learn from the likes of Andreas, Yeah, I mean, it really was. Andreas was the main guy at the time because he was the one producing all of the content. He was the one, you know, basically doing these, you know, hour and a half long streams. And even though he's a scammer now, even Richard Hart at the time, this would be quite controversial to a lot of people, but I used to really enjoy listening to Richard Hart because he was a Bitcoin maxi and he mined, you know, he's been mining it for donkeys and that. Obviously, I don't, you know, wouldn't go near him with a barge pole anymore. I don't listen to any of his stuff anymore. But certainly in 2017, 2018, he was very matter of fact about what Bitcoin does and why it's, you know, why it's immutable, and why the protocol is, you know, something that we all need to protect and that needs to grow. And, you know, he was very much like that. So he did focus a lot of my attention as well. But yeah, so I suppose it was those two, but yeah, Andreas was the one that you know really puts it in perspective about how it, you know, removes the middleman, but how it's you know, it's a kind of anti-war currency as well, how it, you know, it's programmed to go up. You know, the government, you know, he taught you all about how it was impossible for the governments to stop it, you know, talking about how all the nodes work and how Lightning works and all that. And just following Andreas and Tone Vase was another one as well at the time. Tone Vase, Jimmy Song, they used to do. And you know what it's like when you first get in, every bit of YouTube, you just consume everything. And I discovered, like you, I discovered the carnivore diet as well at a very similar time. So not only, so I must have looked awful to my like friends and family because I lost so much weight in like 2 months. I'd lost like 2 stone. I'd gone from like 14. Now I'm 6 foot tall, but I was 14 and a half stone. I went down to like 12 and a half stone in about 3 months just going on carnivore. And everyone was like, what are you doing? What are you doing? I'm just like, well, I don't eat bread. I don't eat cereal. I don't have anything for breakfast. I stop drinking milk, you know, all of these things. And the weight just disappeared. But I do believe it was the carnivore, but it was also the up all night consuming all this content, forgetting to eat. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, so that was it. But yeah, so I went to the Bitcoin meetup in 2018. One other person turned up. He's a Bcasher. I'm like, that was when it was brought home to me that whatever pathway I'd been on that had led me to this point, I was at the something. I was an early adopter. Do you know what I mean? I was something. I was there right at the beginning of something that was so profound and that was so huge for humanity. I couldn't really articulate how big it was, but I just knew it was big. But I was the only one, do you know what I mean, in my part of the world, that was A, talking about it, that B, knew anything about it whatsoever, and C, was actively promoting it to people, like saying to people, you should get some, you know. It's because what triggered the downfall of the 2017 bull market was the opening of the futures, futures. You know, we was telling people, you know, once Bitcoin, they're going to start trading it in Chicago and they're going to be trading it on the exchange. Because everyone at the time, it was like, oh, government will ban it. You know, oh, they won't let that succeed. They'll squash it or get banned. It's like, they can't. They can't ban it. Can they ban the internet? Can they switch the internet off? No, they can't. Do you know what I mean? Oh, yes, they can. No, but they didn't do this. I'm like, yeah, you know, you can get around it. You know, they could switch it off for us, but they can't switch it off for the world. So, you know, so all of those arguments were still kind of being played because, like, you'd think that, oh, they're trading it on the Chicago Stock Exchange now as a futures thing. Now there's legitimacy to it. This is actually a thing. But obviously what happened, I think the day that opened, it was like 19,780, and it just went down ever since from that point onwards. Like it was a proper buy the rumor, sell the news event. Do you know what I mean? And obviously after being in there for 3 months, of course you hold it. I've held it all the way back down to 3,000, which was where I got in again. Do you know what I mean? So it was, that first 6 months was such a roller coaster ride, you know, and you teach yourself about, you know, trading and candlesticks and all of that, because that's, I loved watching Tone Vasey's stuff. And going back to me working in the city, for me personally, it was like, oh, I'm going to get a chance to be a trader, you know, like how I couldn't be a trader earlier in the 90s. I can get that chance now. I can trade Bitcoin. I can trade it against this thing called Ethereum, whatever that is. All I knew, I didn't know what it did. I just knew it was a shitcoin because Tone Vasey was so, he was so anti-shitcoin. But like I say, it was good to be exposed to the toxic maximalism. Do you know what I mean? It kept me out of a world of good. And of course, thinking about it today, I'm buying it 0.1. I'm spending 0.1 Bitcoin on XRP, you know, and like scalping, trading it at the end of the day. And I'm like, woo! And it's funny. So I managed to trade and I managed to earn a little bit of Bitcoin. But I literally saw any Satoshi profit, even if it was just 10,000 sats. For me, it was like, well, in 10 years' time, that 10,000 sats, even though it was probably a tenner back, it wasn't even a tenner. It was probably about, I don't know, 50p or a pound even back then. I was like, yeah, that 10,000 sats in 4, 5, 10 years, that could be £1,000 I've just earned in that trade. Do you know what I mean? So I was only ever trading Bitcoin versus shitcoins for the Bitcoin exchange. I was never interested in making dollars or pounds. So that was my 6 month roller coaster. It's like the Bitcoin meme, you know, that was my journey. But like I say, I was an adamant Bitcoin maxi, was never going to ever hold shitcoins, was just going to, you know, play the shitcoin casino for a bit because it was fun, and I genuinely felt like I was making money. I was still obviously working and doing a bit at the time, but and I had two young children at home as well, so that kind of helped me you know, not burn the candle at both ends, you know, while they're at nursery or they're at school or whatever. I can kind of study some more. But you know, I properly did 10,000 hours of study, you know, that first year to really understand it. And that's why, from, you know, from Jamie Dimon saying what he said and from watching the first Andreas video, it was like, well, it's Bitcoin only, it's Bitcoin forever, never sell your Bitcoin, hodl it and all that. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, it's 2025 now, and thank God for Bitcoin, as Jimmy Song says.
Yeah, it's, and this is a lesson that so many of us had to go through. I certainly did. That the sooner you get exposed to the toxic Bitcoin maximalists, the better things turn out for you.
100%.
And the sooner that you soften your defenses and like actually listen to them and just trust them, because I, for one, got into crypto in 2017. Like so many others, I said, oh, you know, I want to find the next Bitcoin. That's old news. Yeah. Let me get all these shit coins. I had like a whole wallet full of crypto coins.
Absolutely, yeah.
And spent a solid 3 years just, you know, I wasn't even trading. Like I've always had the mindset of, you know, I want to find good things and hold on to them. So I was hodling a bunch of shit coins. And funny enough, I actually traded the Bitcoin. I was holding the shit coins thinking, okay, these things are going to go to the moon because they're the next Bitcoin. I would hold on to them, and Bitcoin is the one I will trade. So like exactly the wrong mindset.
Do you remember in 2017 as well, the forks? Like all of these shit coins kept forking as well, didn't they? So I was kind of like, Verge? There was a few. I remember buying them for the purpose of just holding them for the fork so that you could. And I think, you know, what most people don't know is Ethereum is actually a fork of Ethereum Classic, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And things like that. But that had happened prior. But I can't remember the. There was a few like shitcoiners that Tone Vasey was just destroying, you know, developers and stuff. I forget some of the names. I'll have to I'll have to put in the comments some of the names of the people. I'll have to research them. But yeah, I was literally buying some of these shitcoins just for the forks because everyone was going mad about forks. And yeah, I can confidently say pretty much every shitcoin that I bought, when it forked, it just all fucking went to zero. Do you know what I mean? It was all, do you know, it was just, you know, terrible. So yeah, never did very well on all of those, but it was obvious that Bitcoin would go down less than all the rest. Do you know what I mean? That was the dominant coin. I think at the time, Bitcoin was probably like 75% dominance, you know. And like every couple of years, there's a new top 10, isn't there, of shitcoins. I know, obviously, XRP and Ethereum, Binance, they've all been in the top 10 for a while now. But yeah. Yeah, it was a mad time, weren't it, 2017? It was either the ICO bubbles, you know, everyone was releasing an ICO, and it was so logical because it was like, well, of course, they're going to sell you a white paper, they're going to raise all this money, well, they've already won. What, you know, it's so fear. The mindset is so fear. It's like, well, we've already made an absolute fortune on creating this white paper. What's the point in us actually doing anything that we've said? We've already got all the money. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, it was a really bonkers time. Like I say, it was, I don't think we'll ever get to see that level of mania again. You know, I mean, it was a real gambler's, it was a real gambler's paradise though. You know, do you remember BitLord? Do you remember BitLord?
I don't think I got that one.
He was a big guy. I think he made a fortune on Doge. He's an Australian guy. He's a really, really funny guy. But yeah, he was one of those Twitter influencers, you know, a little bit like Kobe, like kind of pushing a lot of shit coins. And they, you know, still do, I suppose, don't they, you know? But yeah,
I mean, you nail it there. It's just a total fiat casino. And this is the thing that's is hard to really get through crypto people's heads, and myself included, and during that 2017 to 2020 phase when I was in that, was I didn't have the foundation of understanding how money works and the going through the rabbit hole of what actually is fiat money, what is sound money, how has money changed through history, how does society reflect the type of money that underlies it. And this is why, you know, when I just see all these stupid comments on Twitter that are clearly people just regurgitating what they've heard from some crypto influencer that is incentivized to say Bitcoin is bad so they can sell their coin.
It's the blockchain, not Bitcoin.
I just send them the Bitcoin Standard link. Like here's, or just a picture of the Bitcoin Standard. Like, this is what you need to read. It will take you through the foundational steps you need to understand what you're actually looking for here. And the thing about the book that makes it so good is that it's not even a book about Bitcoin. It's a book about money and understanding the history of money, what it actually is, and what we need to be looking for when we're figuring out, you know, what is the difference between all these crypto coins? Why is Bitcoin different? And for me personally, it wasn't actually the Bitcoin Standard. That came a little bit later. I stumbled across this guy, Mike Maloney, who's a gold bug. Not sure if you know him.
Yes, I do, yeah.
But I just found this during the lockdowns. I was in New Zealand at the time during 2020, just, you know, reading a bunch of books and watching YouTube videos with my, you know, fiat breakfast cereal I was still eating every morning.
Yeah.
And I found this series called the Hidden Secrets of Money series by Mike Maloney, which basically goes through history of money.
Yeah.
And that was just enough of a primer for me. Of course, his solution was that we need to go back to gold, but I had enough of a foundation from, you know, hearing about the Bitcoiners and him talking about the problem with fiat that I figured out, okay, he's nailing the problem, but Bitcoin is actually the solution that fits in here even better.
Mm.
So that's when I kind of finally put it together. 2020 was like, I was like, okay, Bitcoin is the one here. I started really focusing on Bitcoin and stopped trading it. I got really lucky trading it because the year before that, I was traveling in Australia, basically paying my way through Australia by, you know, swing trading Bitcoin, getting really lucky, making enough money to pay for my travels, and sports betting. I was really into fantasy football, and there are betting booths all over Australia, so I was making some money on that. I was just like totally degenerate way of life, of course, but that was, you know, that's what it was.
So you've done the digital.
I switched to full Bitcoin maximalism at that point, and, you know, just start stacking sats. That's the way that it's meant to be.
Yeah, so you've done the digital nomad thing for quite a few years then, Ben, haven't you?
I have. Yeah, that was, so I started really in 2018, and then, you know, 2018 was Australia. 2018 to 2019 was Australia. Then 2019 to 2020 was New Zealand.
So what was the trigger?
I mean, that's like 7-8 years ago now. Yeah.
What was the trigger? Was there anything that happened at home? Was there just, I'm getting bored? Or, you know, there's more to life than this. Was it a bad job? Was it, you know, what was the trigger? What made you think, right, I've had it. I'm going to travel for the next. Well, you're still traveling, right?
I'm in Costa Rica right now recording this. I'm all over the place as to this day.
Where are you from originally?
From the northwest of the U.S., so the Seattle area. I was born in Portland, moved up to Seattle area. Yeah, beautiful place of the world, by the way.
Yes, wanna, where the Goonies was, right? Portland, Oregon?
I think so. You know, I can't actually remember. Sounds right. But
I mean,
the whole northwest is just so full of beauty and nature. It actually has spoiled me when it comes to nature traveling, because I just remember, you know, when I went to New Zealand and, you know, we're doing these road trips through all these beautiful mountains and rivers and forests, and everyone around me is just like, their jaws like on the ground everywhere they go. Look at all this nature. It's so incredible. And I'm kind of thinking, like, it kind of looks like the Northwest a little bit. It kind of looks like my backyard. Like, you know,
you got similar Northwest climate is really there beautiful as place. Well,
but
right?
The reason why I decided to ultimately just jump over this lifestyle was, I graduated from college. I went to the University of Washington in Seattle and graduated 2017. And I started working a job. I worked as a recruiter for 6 months and got fired because I sucked and it was terrible. And it just was like, wasn't a fit. And then I did door-to-door sales for another 6 months. And that I was actually very good at, but I still hated it. I just didn't like working for someone else. I figured out very quickly that I wanted to, you know, go out, see the world, expand my horizons, have some experiences, because I just spent so many years in school, you know, like, what is that? I know that the school system is a little bit different for you guys, but maybe a similar number of years that you just spend sitting in a classroom under these LED lights, just getting your brain melted by propaganda.
Yeah.
I mean, like 16 years of your life or something, you know, eight. Well, I know it's more than that. It's like...
Yeah, here it's like 4, 5 till 18. And then obviously they're pushing for you to go into university, which my daughter's going to university, even though I've tried my hardest to talk her out of it. But because she's going into engineering, she's actually going to kind of guaranteed a job. And she's a girl as well. So there is there's favoritism towards, you know, women. And that, I discovered that when I did all the university rounds with her. You know, they've got, what do you call it? They've got scholarships and things like that for girls, but not for boys. Oh, no, you can get a job and work alongside and still have to pay all your fees. But girls, no, I want to make it nice and easy for you. Do you know what I mean? Which is so fiat again, isn't it? You know, that mentality.
But hey, she's got to take advantage of it while I was there.
100%. 100%.
Fiat leaves little, you know, treasures for you to pick up and
100%
get these stupid benefits that shouldn't be there, but you know, it's the world we live in right now. As long as she knows the end game and has her mind fixated on that, like, you know, take the freebies, why not?
Yeah, well, luckily for them, you know, they got the best education during 2020. You know, they really understand now what communism is, because obviously going through the COVID communism, health communism, where there was distinct rules for 1% of the country that were different to 99% of the country. And it's like, you know, you've lived through communism. And, you know, so they recognize it. So they're not into any of the woke stuff. Do you know what I mean? Because it's like, oh, Dad, do you know what I mean? It's like, hopefully, I like to say that we're raising the lions and the lionesses. Like this generation, like if you, obviously, I don't know if you read the book Fourth Turning, but how every generation kind of goes through all these crises at different times. And it's that generation, I think, that will completely smash the whole DEI thing, and they'll see it for the scam. It really, a lot of them, I mean, I speak to a lot of their friends and they know it's all rubbish. And they say some of the most offensive things. Do you know what I mean? Considering this generation has been so exposed to, you know, the cancellation of celebrities for nothing. Do you know what I mean? We have literally a guy. There was a big story here recently where a TV presenter, he's a famous TV presenter, like works on a lot of these cooking shows. Apparently, he told a dirty joke, or he told an anti woman joke or something, you know. And it was on every news station. It was in every newspaper. He got fired for that for 3 weeks, right? At the same time on Twitter, there was a scandal about Arla, which is a milk dairy producer that was putting this bovar in the cow's feed to stop them farting. And, you know, the poisons and everything, and just all the synthetics and all the garbage, all the chemicals. And yet everybody in the country was talking about this guy telling a slightly misogynistic joke that got him fired and cancelled. Do you know what I mean? From everywhere. And then there was another one. There was actually two chefs. I don't know what it's like with the chefs, but there was two chefs that literally in the last couple of months have been cancelled. Well, you know, and it just shows you that, yeah, MSN's kind of finished, because like a lot of the people you speak to now, you know, that they know that we're just being trolled by our government. You know, they're literally going on there and saying, you know, green net zero, green energy, you know, it's going to bring us lower energy prices. It's like, all right, when's that going to happen? Because in the UK, we've got the highest energy prices in the world. And they've put windmills up everywhere, and we've got the highest energy prices in the world. And then obviously you then do a bit of a deep dive, and then you realise, oh, they're subsidising everyone that's putting these things up, and they're paying them even when they're not generating electricity. And I know Hashley Giles on Twitter is pushing Ed Miliband every day because of this curtailed coin. I don't know if you've seen that, but basically there's a website made in some British guys obviously made it. And it's basically just keeping a log of how much Bitcoin we could have generated if we hadn't because basically they have to pay them to switch off the wind because of the stabilization of the energy network. They have to pay them to switch off the wind. And obviously the curtail coin is, well, if you just put like a mini Bitcoin miner, so rather than turning it off and paying them millions of pounds to turn it off, we could keep them running, mine Bitcoin, and actually turn that £1 billion a year, and it's a billion they pay just on turning windmills off. That £1 billion a year could potentially be £1 billion of Bitcoin a year. But Ed Miliband, our absolute nutjob energy secretary, he's like, oh, you know, he doesn't believe in it, thinks it's a Ponzi scheme, thinks it's a scam. And all of that. And, you know, this is what we're dealing with in these countries. You've got these incompetent individuals all filling the top jobs, all getting less votes than any government has ever got. And they've, in this country, they've gone after pensioners, they've gone after students, they've gone after white British people mainly. They keep importing people by the truckload, by the day, you know, and putting them in hotels around the corner. And, you know, it's just, there's a lot of negativity. And yet every time the Prime Minister comes on, you know, anyone asks him a question about it, he goes, oh, Putin. Or he'll say, oh, the Tories, you know, it was Conservatives' fault. Do you know what I mean? So there's no real dialogue. There's no real progress. So the only, you know, to quote Milton Friedman, the only way we can take back control of our borders and the money is if there's a slight roundabout way that we can force it off of them. Without them being able to do anything about it, you know. So, yeah, there's a lot of problems in this country. But, yeah, they don't seem – no one seems to understand it stems from the money. It stems from the lack of accountability, the fact they can throw money at these projects, which devalue our pound, which sends house prices through the roof. House prices in the UK now are so insane. It's something like 10 or 11x the average salary to buy – you know, the average house. Do you know what I mean? In this country now, it's just gone absolutely berserk. In fact, I actually did a, we bought our first house in 2003, and I actually went back and measured it. And I could have bought my house in 2003 for, I think, 1.5 inglots of gold. I think that's right. Or 1 inglot of gold, I think, at the time. It was about 160,000. And yet, when we sold our house 4 years ago, we managed to sell it for, it had gone up from 160 to 510,000 in the 19 years we'd lived there. But when I did the calculation in gold, it was only worth half an inglot measured in gold. So I'd actually lost, you know, is an inglot 12 kilos, isn't it? Is it? Do you know that?
I don't even know. I don't know these conversions.
Yeah, the inglots, like, you know, you see the big, you know, in Fort Knox, they're supposed to have these big, heavy.
Like the one you see on in the movies. But, yeah,
the big,
old big
heavy, yeah. Heavy bars of gold. I think, I mean, it's been a while since essentially, so fiat had gone up. It looks on paper. And of course, this is what every normie in the UK thinks. They think they're wealthy. Because, oh, their house has gone up 3x in 10 years. So then you measure it in a money that doesn't get debased, like gold. And you can argue whether that gets debased or not. But yeah, I've lost half a slab of gold. I've lost. So yeah, it's all around you. And this is the biggest psyop, I think, of a lot of them. Because the problem with having no accountability and being able to leverage your citizens and the future citizens of your country is you can make any kind of crackpot idea happen. And when it inevitably fails, they'll just blame Putin, COVID, Zelensky, the previous regime. Do you know what I mean? And
there's no responsibility factor there.
Zero. Like,
when you have the infinite money printer, and this is why this is such a focus of my podcast and the other Bitcoin podcasts, is when you have an infinite money printer at the top, there's no responsibility keeping boundaries around the actions taken by these people, like you said, which are often incompetent or evil or some mixture of both, because those are the only types of people that are able to win in the current political system where you have to just lie and cheat, steal your way up to the top.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, obviously the Cantillon effect means that those that are already wealthy are just going to get wealthier and wealthier by the day, you know. So that the people with real influence, those at the top, that, you know, they're not going to want to change things. You know, so of course Warren Buffett doesn't understand Bitcoin. Of course, Bill Gates doesn't. Their entire net worth is in fear, you know.
And the way that they keep making more, too. Like, they are the money spigot beneficiaries. And that's what 100%. We have, is a giant money spigot. And we're told this trickle-down lie that it's going to trickle down to the rest of the economy. But, of course, that never happens. We've been hearing that for decades. It never happens. They just siphon up all of it and just keep, you know, dribbling out teeny little scraps for people to keep them from rioting, basically, and keep them stupid, and also use their money and power and influence to physically keep people stupid. I was just posting yesterday about, you know, fluoride, and I saw you posting as well, the chemtrails in the sky over where you are is just absolutely horrific all across Europe and the USA. Like, they're literally spraying the sky with metal and filling the water with poison and filling the cows, even our food supply, like you said, Bovaer, that's Bill Gates' new thing, is to pump these cows full of poison. Like every single thing, they're just poisoning. And you can't convince me that a huge part of that isn't because they need to keep people stupid. They need to literally prevent their brains from working properly and the men from having any testosterone in their bodies, because then they can continue this stupid game. Yeah. And this is why Bitcoin is such a massive catalyst here, because that Bitcoin forces responsibility. When there's no longer a money printer, it cuts off the source of their power that they're able to continue doing this with, which is why it's so exciting for me.
Yeah, 100%. And I think most Bitcoin, of course, we're here for number go up technology. You know, the number go up technology is like the biggest Trojan horse because everyone's going to get that fear of missing out. Everyone's going to get that FOMO, you know. There's the meme of, you know, 100,000 Bitcoin, everyone's queuing up to get it, but £10,000 Bitcoin, you know, there's one person there. Do you know what I mean? So that
I think
is,
we got Trump with that one too. I think that all we had to say was, hey Trump, China might buy some Bitcoin. You might want to get some so they don't beat you. And then now they're talking about this Bitcoin strategic reserve. And this is, you know, what I'm trying to explain to my friends on the left, which is the majority of my friends coming from Seattle. Mm. I try to like let them know, because they see the headline, oh, Trump is pro Bitcoin, or the Trump administration is like doing Bitcoin things, so therefore Bitcoin must be very bad.
Yeah.
But this is the ultimate Trojan horse here. And what I explain to them is this is because they all believe, you know, everything that Trump does is taking away their freedom and destroying the world. All the people on the right say that, you know, the people on the left are destroying the world, take away their freedom. What I just say to each side is this removes the ability of the people you hate to screw with your life and take away your freedom, whichever one matters to you. We just need to focus on shrinking their power. If you are, you know, spending every day stressed out and anxious about what your government is going to take from you today, it means the government has too much power. So we need to shrink the whole thing down, and you just have to, you know, softly like walk them through how that is good for absolutely everybody on both sides. This whole left-right split is a huge distraction. It's a show. Both sides are created by, or they're run by the same people who 100%. Do not have our best interests at heart. And Bitcoin fixes all of this. It's fantastic.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it, like I say, it's so profound. You know, what Satoshi created, obviously, he was stood on the shoulders of giants, because what people don't seem to realize as well is that there was 40 years of research and people writing papers, you know, the cypherpunks and all of that from cryptograph. So for them to turn around and say, oh, yeah, the CIA created it or whatever, you know, and all that rubbish, it's like, well, no, don't you understand? It's not, you know, it didn't come about in a day. Literally, Satoshi kind of put that final piece of the jigsaw together, which was to disappear and to be anonymous, and to, you know, create the blockchain and difficulty adjustment and all of these things. And just a lot of the 369 clock thing. I don't know if you've seen that, but the 21 million and the numbers are very powerful as well. You know, why he chose the 21 million and, you know, the block sizes as well, like how all these amazing coincidences happen, shows you how when everything aligns, like, you know, like the block reward of 6.25, 3.12, that's the percent left of Bitcoin when the block changed. So when it went down to 3.125, that means there's only 3.125% of Bitcoin to be mined. Do you know what I mean? So there's all these amazing little idiosyncrasies that have all lined up that, you know, like I say, the guy was a genius for putting it all together and doing it in a way that, you know, it survived 15 years of attacks, 16 years of attacks, and it's still here stronger than ever. And, you know, we're, you know, nearly 100 grand again, and we're 85 grand.
And we're seeing right now that it truly is anti-fragile. It's already become this unwinnable whack-a-mole game where any government who tries to stop it or outlaw it is just shooting themselves and their own citizens in the foot, which, you know, they're just excluding themselves from the game, and that's it.
Yeah.
And more and more governments are figuring this out. China, how many times have they tried to ban Bitcoin in China? Like 17 different times or something insane?
Yeah, they do it every year.
Every time it just failed.
They did do it every year. I think the last time they did it was 2021, because someone Googled this the other day, actually. And I said, yeah, they did ban it in 2021. And what happened? All those machines went turned off, and they all went to, you know, jurisdictions in and around it, and they all switched back on, and, you know, it was resumed. You know, that is decentralization. The fact that it just basically roots around China, right? China, switch it off, don't allow it or whatever. That's it. All right. But, you know, China as well, in 1500s, they'd pretty much mapped the entire world with all the naval charts and everything. They could have been like a huge empire, but apparently they sabotaged themselves and they threw them all away or something. I remember reading. So China do have this habit of becoming this like dominant force and throwing it all away. Do you know what I mean?
I vaguely remember something about them really going into silver instead of gold. My history memory is terrible. I think Saifedean talked about it at some point, but you're right. Like, they do have a bad repeating pattern of just shooting themselves in the foot every time there's a huge opportunity.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
That was it. Saifedean as well. I remember Saifedean, you know, I think Saifedean's obviously, he used to appear on Tone Vey's podcast quite a lot in 2018, 2019. This is before the Bitcoin Standard came out. But when he wrote the Bitcoin Standard, yeah, I bought that straight away and read it. And I was fascinated by it all, but you know, it just helps having that kind of historical knowledge that, you know, we've always since Rome and Julius Caesar, and you know, the world's always been fiat. You know, this is really a paradigm shift that has just never been possible before. Yeah, it's a huge opportunity. And talking of Trojan horses, I would like to segue into music being a Trojan horse.
Of butterflies guiding me in sound, so I just come to tell you that I found my way. I just come to show you.
When you see headlines like Daniel Ek, who's the Spotify owner, was worth $6.5 billion last year or something, they calculated his wealth to be. Well, that's only more than pretty much every single artist on his platform. Do you know what I mean? That's like the money they've generated in the last year. And you're just like, that's another form of communism right there, isn't it? Like, or not communism, but like a kind of crony capitalism, isn't it? Where, you know, all the money goes to the top 1% or the guy at the top. And yeah, so there's this Trojan horse sitting there with music, and you've got all of these disgruntled musicians everywhere that are all on Twitter, and they're all moaning about Spotify, and none of them are making any money from streaming, and you know, it's being diluted and getting less and less every year. And I'm in all of their Twitter threads commenting on there. Oh, you know, check out Wavlake, or check out Fountain, or check out the Valueverse. You know, you can fix this. We can fix this. You know, you can receive up to 99% of all the boosts for your music. Going back to the meetups, we did our first Bitcoin meetup, I think, in 2021. I think we started our Bitcoin meetups in the middle of the bear market, like after COVID. But it was the first time we was allowed out. And the first Bitcoin meetup I did, I think there was about 5 or 6 people turn up. But we was all in Telegram groups then, because we was all being censored or shadow banned on Facebook. But Telegram didn't have no censorship. So a lot of people migrated over from Facebook, and you knew these people were the resistance. These people were primed for Bitcoin. If anyone was going to kind of, you know, join you in the rabbit hole, it was going to be these people that would join you on Telegram. So in 2018, I set up a Bitcoin Essex Telegram feed. And as I was learning things, I would whack it on the Telegram. And then I met someone in one of these, one of these anti-lockdown groups who knew me from a family friend, And her name's Moles. Shout out to Moles. She is she's like a mental health coach. She's like a life coach, and she teaches the three principles. And you know, she's amazing at what she does. She does a podcast called One Mind In. And she said, you know, you should start a meetup and all of that. And I'm like, well, okay. She had quite, you know, she had decent, quite a big like Twitter following as well. I'm like, all right, well, okay. If you'll come and do it with me, then yeah, let's put it on. So we started throwing meetups once a month, sometimes twice a month in the summer. And we would go like all around Essex, really. We would just go and meet up in pubs and things like that. But then we tried to find those locations that were prime for Bitcoin, and we had no success in trying to orange pill merchants. It's too heavy a subject to go, bleh, do you know what I mean? It's and for the normie brain that's used to fear and used to how things work, they're so beaten down with having to work, you know, from morning to night. They haven't got time to study any of this stuff. And this is why a lot of people went down the rabbit hole in COVID, because people were literally being paid to stay at home, weren't they? You know, thanks to the money printer again. Because if people weren't getting paid to stay at home, people wouldn't have stayed at home. You know, that once again, COVID and the lockdowns was paid for by fear. It was a way for them to print up a ton of money that was going to transfer all this wealth from the have-nots all the way up to the haves, and we pay for it the rest of our life. But during that whole period of time, I think a lot of people did get a chance to do a lot of studying. I think that's why you saw the price go from $4,000, I want to say, up to $69,000 in 18 months. And throughout that time, we'd been running a meetup. And like I say, trying to find a location that would understand where you were going with this thing. Oh, yeah, no, we want to do a meetup. And we would come here and it would be every month and it would be a certain. But it was just became too difficult. So I did think of a workaround, and I managed to get I managed to get a static Lightning URL. So whenever we'd go to a new restaurant, we'd go to a curry house or we'd go to a pub or whatever. It was a Lightning URL that people could send Bitcoin to, and then I would pay for the meal with cash. Do you know what I mean? So people were got the, you know, actually finally being able to use it. And then if anyone wanted to
That's
buy
it. That's actually so genius for you, because you're shedding off your fiat and stacking more Bitcoin.
Stacking Bitcoin, yeah. But I was offering it back to them as well. I was saying, look, if you send this to Lightning, the second it comes back to you, you know, it's going to be obfuscated enough that the KYC links are probably going to be broken. And I've heard recently about them that the whole, you know, monitor it, like the KYC thing is like all the analytics, you know, the chain analysis companies, they're all just scamming these people as well, because they ain't got a clue who's got the Bitcoin, or you know, their real kind of, you know, names and addresses to it. Do you know what I mean? Once it hits Lightning, I think that's pretty much good enough, isn't it? It's like, that's it, it's a dead end. So yeah, so I mean, it was a way. I would call it the curry mixer, because we would always use it when we'd go into the curry house and there'd be Bitcoin on it, and I'd, like I say, I'd pay cash, and we'd always tip the waiters. You know, the waiters would always download this wallet, download a moon wallet, download wallet of Satoshi. We'll send you some Sats. We'll give you a tip, and then we'd go back there like 2 months later and say, you still got that Bitcoin? And they'd look at it and go, wow, it's gone up. And I'm like, yeah, it's great, isn't it? So, anyway, so yeah, so going back to the Trojan horse. This is why I kind of pivoted from that. We still do the meetups. I've been a little bit lazy over winter, because winter's just been so horrible here. Even though, like, we hit 110,000, you think people would be, woo, but it's almost like people just, winter's just so grey and nasty here, and food is so expensive. Like, to go out and just to have a meal is like £30 a head, you know, and this was probably £15 a head 18 months ago. Do you know what I mean? To go and have a pint, you know, a pint and a glass of wine, I think, well, I'm paying like £11 for a glass of wine now, you know, in restaurants, which, you know, you go to the supermarket, you can pick up a bottle of wine for £5, you know. So all the money printing has created this inflation, and it's so, like, to spend money in this country, you're getting no value for your money whatsoever. Everything's gone through the roof. No one's wages have kept up with the inflation as well. So everyone's feeling a pinch. Anyone that would have like disposable income like 2-3 years ago, that's gone now. People are barely breaking even. Some of them are even like getting in debt just to survive every single year. So it's not good where we are at the moment. Anyway, so going back to the Trojan horse. So this is why I thought, well, this is growing sentiment against Spotify, against centralized systems. I think there's a much more pressing need for artists and musicians to get paid. I think if I can show them and I get a use case. Now, there's this guy called Longy who's been a friend of mine for at least 20 years. And I've never understood why he's not made it. Hopefully you'll play some of his songs here. I mean, he's got some he's proper rock and roll. He kind of writes like Richard Ashcroft and he sings like Paolo Entini. You know, he's got fantastic voice. He writes really upbeat songs, which of the message is always, you know, be what you want to be, and you know, you can do it if you dream it, and you know, it's very uplifting music. It's very rock and roll, and I love the guy. He's a huge fan. He's more Liam Gallagher than Sam Smith, is how I define him, because he's like a local rock star to us around here. And once again, he's so talented, I just don't understand why he's never made it. Go through some of his songs on Fountain or on Wav Lake today. I'm Still Here is his latest song, which he released, I think, in December. It's a beautiful, beautiful song. It's up there with anything Noel Gallagher's written. It's up there with anything John Lennon's written. Do you know what I mean? It's a beautiful, beautiful song. And anyway, so I approached him and I said to him, I met him surreptitiously, you know, down the local park, you know, and he didn't turn up for the first three times that I'd arranged to meet him. But that's Longy, you know, his typical rock and roll. There's always something else to do. So we went down the park. I met him and we were just walking around the park. I was walking the dog. He was having it was a nice day. And I'm just explaining to him, just said, there's this thing, you know, you can put your music on it and it's very decentralized and, you know, it's brand new. It's a whole new paradigm shift. It's something like you've never seen before. You know, but what do you know about Bitcoin? He's like, well, I know people have done NFTs, and he started talking. I'm like, okay, if you've heard of that, you know enough. But let me stop you. Bitcoin isn't crypto, you know. And I had to go through that whole process. Anyway, I did. I said, just give me an, it's so easy to do, Longy. He said, well, can you do it for me? I said, yeah, no problem. So I went on to Wav Lake, and it was Joe Martin, who I'd heard a podcast of him like 18 months ago, and he was telling how, you know, he's getting boosts from truck drivers in America. You know, there was no way he was ever going to get discovered by anyone in America on Spotify, for example. And yet all of a sudden he's getting sats coming through, boosting his songs. And Joe Martin's music is very, very folksy, very Americana. It's very like kind of country. I mean, the Yanks do love it. And I just explained the whole process to Longy. Oh, it's my dog. Come say hello, buddy. He's just barged his way in the door.
Always welcome. We love doggos in the stream, always.
Oh, it's Italian Greyhound. Hello, Mike. Say hello. Say hello to Ben. He's been away for a few days. He's just come home. Oh, so I hope he's been, I hope my wife fed him. That's probably why he's come looking for me. Anyway, so back to Longy. So I go and post. He gives me a track, and we meet up. We have a meal, and I go through it all with him. And I post this track to Wav Lake, and it's called Love Schizophrenia. And, you know, it gets a few listens, it gets a few sats. I post on Twitter, you know, check out Longy. You know, you can listen to his music on Fountain, any Bitcoin. Obviously, I've got a Telegram channel as well. I've got like 100 people in there, so I post it in there. I'm also involved in like all the Valueverse, like all the Bitcoin events. There's a UK Bitcoin Maxi group as well. So I was just basically telling people, like trying to share the message that, you know, Bitcoin, we know Bitcoin fixes the world and fixes everything, but Bitcoin can fix music. And here you go. So Longy was like my case study, if you like. So I've got on the website, I've written a whole blog about, you know, how I approached him and with the song we put on. So then I upload the second song. Now, the second song's called The Underclass, and it's Longy's most successful song to date because Adam Curry's podcast, Podcast 2.0, he played Longy's song. He heard it. And I was listening to the show anyway. I had no idea that he was going to play. And all of a sudden, he's like, Dave, they would only play one song during their two-hour show. And all of a sudden, he's discovered Longy. He's played Longy's show. All of a sudden, I get a phone call the next day from Longy saying, I don't know what's going on. My wallet is kind of going mad. There's like loads of sats in there. And, you know, it's probably only 20, 30, 40,000 sats. But for an artist that earns £100 or $100 a year on Spotify, for them to all of a sudden receive 20, 30 quid overnight, they're like, wow, what is this? So I go and obviously thank Adam Curry. Thanks for playing the song. And obviously it's gone down really well because it's a really kind of, you know, rock and roll song. And it's called The Underclass. So it's essentially talking about us Bitcoiners and why we're, you know, seen by the elites as the scum of the earth and all of that. And I mean, that's not what it's about. You can make up your own mind what it's about. But it's a very kind of poignant song to play. And Adam Curry's obviously played it. And yeah, it just kind of exploded from there. So that was the confirmation Longy needed to go, this is amazing. And obviously the tech's improved since then because I kind of didn't really share Nosta with him because he's not really that tech-based, even though he does Instagram and he does his social media. But like I say, it was like finally he's getting discovery and he's getting discovery all over the world all of a sudden. So over the last 18 months, I think I've published around about 28 of his songs now. And these are all songs that he owns the publishing for. I said to him, just send me an MP3, send me some artwork, tell me the name of the song. I'll go and publish it all for you and I'll promote it and I'll spend money, you know, promoting it. So I take a little bit of a split, but that little bit of a split helps me, you know, whenever it gets played on a music show, you know, I can like boost it and whatnot. And yeah, and obviously from Adam Curry's first podcast, this, and we're talking like May 2023, I want to say. So yeah, nearly 2 years now from his first show. Then all of a sudden these music shows start popping up. Now majority of them are in America, it seems. There isn't a UK based podcasting 2.0 music show now, but basically what this wallet switching technology does, and it does it all for you automatically as an artist, is when they list all of these track lists in their show, the wallets just automatically switch over. So anyone that's listening to the show and say streaming 10 sats a minute or whatever, those sats are going to go directly to the artist. Which is obviously completely the opposite of what Spotify does, because they take £15 in this country, the subscription's 15 quid. They'll take 15 quid, they'll keep £14.99 of it, and the artist that you listen to will probably get 0.1p of that. Do you know what I mean? Say if you listen to 10 different artists every month, they're going to get a fraction of a penny. Whereas all of a sudden, Longy's seen this. He's getting like 80% of everything that's kind of going through. You know, once Wav Lake take their 10% and I took my 10% or whatever. And all of a sudden, he's like, wow. And he's tried to explain it to other artists as well. But it's not easy because they're like, oh, Bitcoin, you know, Bitcoin's a scam and all of that. Yeah, they've still got this same fiat mindset. And that their only goal is to get record contract and discovered, you know, and you know, the next big thing on Spotify. That seems to be their only pathway to success, you know. Anyway, so with Longy's I think now in the top five in the world of, you know, Bitcoin, receiving Bitcoin for his music. Basically, he's gone and 30x'd his Spotify earnings in the first 6 months. And, you know, it's easy to say he's a convert. And from his point of view, it's not enough for him to make a living out of. Like, he can't give up his day job because by that, you know, he's a builder by day. He's up scaffold. He does plastering and rendering and all those kind of construction type of work. That's his day job. And he has to play as an artist. And when you hear his music, and hopefully you'll play a couple of tracks in this, he's such a talented musician.
I absolutely will. Yeah, I'm gonna go listen. I haven't listened to him myself, but I will, and I'll throw them around this episode so we can show some love for sure.
Whatever you like. I mean, he's indie. He'll do, you know, I think he's got, you know, R&B. He's got soul. He's got punk. He's got rock and roll. He's got slow songs. He's got love songs. Do you know what I mean? He's such a talented boy. It just doesn't seem right for him to have to work, do a day job, and then spend his spare time scraping up enough money to get in the studio to record the stuff. Because it's a loss, you know. Everything he records, writes and records, generally ends up being a loss. Even when these guys go out and gig, you know, they have to pay for a sound guy. And our gig that we've got coming up next month, we have to pay for, like, you know, doorman and all of these people. It costs money to actually perform. You know, they barely break even when they do these things. So it was a case study that was proven so emphatically that I've now got another two artists as well that I've managed to orange peel. And once again, you know, these are all musicians that have been plugging away for 20 years and have had very, very, very minimal success. But now just someone sending a boost saying, wow, I love this track. This is my new favorite song. Nathan Abbott is another one who's going to be performing on our show. I put his song up. He had a new album come out this year. And once again, he's got a brilliant, brilliant voice. He writes beautiful, heartfelt, like R&B, like all acoustic guitar as well. And him just getting a boost from some anonymous person in America saying, wow, this is my new favorite track. He was grinning from ear to ear. Do you know what I mean? So it has that same power to touch these artists to make it feel like they're winning finally, and they've got something that they can do and put out there, and they're going to be making a difference somewhere. So much like me as a hairdresser, having that ability to make someone else smile, just 100 sats with a, I love this tune. You know, I can't, you know, this tune's on repeat. Makes them feel so good that it inspires them to keep going, to show their talent. Because I've always said this is one of my phrases, when incentive and passion collide, amazing things happen. And what more incentive is there to earn Bitcoin for doing what you love to do, what God's given you a talent to go and do and to share with other people.
Escape from two bruised out of legs. I'm standing on drip, fed into net blues. Ain't time that we unify, so take me to the gallows. If I talk, I turn the ship we swallow. No, but when we gonna learn? So hear this beating sound, it won't let you down. No, in time. Turn this around. Did you ever in the morning think of me when the birds went soaring? Now come on, plead with me as you look to the shadows. I come crawling out. Did you ever in the morning think of me when the birds went soaring? Now come on, plead with me as you look to the shadows. I come crawling out.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, so they're the three artists that I've been promoting. Fable as well is another new one on the scene as well. They've been number one on Fountain. You know, you can go on because there's charts and everything that update all the different platforms. They have their own charts. Podcast Index themselves got their own chart, which counts, you know, how many shows a song's been played on. I think RSS Blue is another platform where they count how many individual wallets have boosted a song, you know, and they make a chart like that. So there's loads of different metrics and charts, but Fountain also do one as well. And Fable are regularly in the top 10 because, like I say, you guys over there, you Yanks, you love British music. And yeah, it's been really great for them. And like I say, I'm incentivized to push them because I'm fans of them. Do you know what I mean? I love their music too.
And there's no shame in the fact that you're taking a cut of that.
No. You know,
because as you help these people, you're also incentivized to help them grow and be a booster of them. And this is one of the things that I talked about with Catherine, who I had on and recorded recently, how it's such a team effort making these songs and getting this music out there. There's so many pieces to the team that produces these tracks. And now that we have Value for Value, you can easily and simply just split the money between all these people, and you're all going to get way more than you would if you were working in the fiat music paradigm,
because 100%.
Now you guys get a huge percentage to share amongst each other, and it removes all these barriers of the politics that happen between all those people when you are on the old system where, you know, sometimes there's clashing in between like the manager side and the artist side, and they have to fight each other over, you know, how much of a cut you each get. Well, with this, it just makes it so much more clear cut because you can just program it straight in. And it just truly, it makes the whole artistic process so much smoother and more exciting because, you know, as all of us who've been on Nostra for a while and folks like myself who have podcasts who are also getting boosts on Fountain, it's not about the amount of sats you're getting, which it's usually a small amount. Like you said, 100 sats on Nostra, you know, I get zapped 21 sats all the time.
Yeah.
I get a dopamine boost every single time. It doesn't matter how much it is because it just shows you how seamless and easy it is for people to transact value with each other. And it also proves that when people are working within this ecosystem and they're consuming or producing within this ecosystem, people are doing it. People are participating. They're sending zaps. Yeah. They're, you know, the people getting zaps are producing more content because it's so easy for people to show love between each other. And they're doing that. We're seeing the most beautiful human nature at play here where even something as simple as me just posting a meme on Nostra and I get zaps for it, or someone like Longy posting a song and getting zaps for it. People are zapping it because they appreciate it. And it brings out the best in people when there's no longer any of these borders. Cause I know that it's surely a common rebuttal that you get from these artists saying like, oh, like who's going to actually send me money for just like hearing my song. People don't do that because the current rails don't even allow it.
Yeah.
So once you change the rails to where it's super easy, it's one button press and it can include a little message. I mean, maybe you could illuminate this a little bit. Like how much have you seen, you sort of talked about it there, but I mean, you see better than I do how willing people are to support artists they love.
Oh yeah, 100%. It's a very, very small bubble at the moment. I'd say probably there's only 10% of Bitcoiners know that this is occurring. You know, there's probably only 10% of Bitcoiners that know Nostra is a thing as well. Do you know what I mean?
And that's of Bitcoiners, which is also itself a very small slice
amount,
of the whole population.
Amount. And you know, you're not talking your normies. You're not talking about the people that have bought, you know, 100 quid of Bitcoin and they've left it on Coinbase. You know, I'm talking about like the hardcore Bitcoiners that go to meetups and things like that. They're not aware of it. And this is really what I want to try and do is let's start with the Bitcoiners, but, you know, get as many Bitcoiners on there as possible. Now what is important as well is this understanding of, you know, I should hold my Bitcoin, I should never spend it. Well, part of the magic people need to witness is it working. And this is what I've said in my industry. You know, I'm a hairdresser by trade, and I've said to a lot of hairdressers, I've said, if you want people to buy their haircut from you using Bitcoin, you've got to give them a 20% discount. Do you know what I mean? Because then I can spend and replace, and it's cheaper than using fiat. Because it, you know, back in the day, it's not so much now, not many people accept cash, but they used to give you discounts if you paid in cash. Do you know what I mean? You'd go into any kind of store and say, oh, you know, can I get a discount in cash? And they'd give you a discount in cash. And this is very similar. You know, in order to get people to really adopt Bitcoin, they need to really see it working in their daily life. So for artists to see it and for them to bring their fans into it and say, oh, you know, rather than spending £15 a month on Spotify, you know, £15 is about 20,000 sats. You know, if you gave 20,000 sats to your favorite artists on Wav Lake or on Fountain, you know, that's going to mean a huge deal for them. Do you know what I mean? It's going to be huge. But yeah, how the legacy system works, and you alluded to it then, it's very slow, like all of the centralized systems, because you've got all these speed bumps in the way. Now, Longy was telling me that in order to get his music on Spotify, he has to pay a publisher or a distributor. I think he was saying that they're at $120 a year he has to pay for this company to. So he sends them the track. They have to then go and check a database, make sure that it's not, you know, it's not plagiarism, it doesn't sound like anything else lyrically, you know, all of this stuff has to be cleared, and it can take quite a few weeks. Well, if you're only earning $120 a year from Spotify and YouTube earnings, well, that's just going straight to the fiat middleman, and you're not actually seeing any of it. Do you know what I mean? You're literally only earning from selling t-shirts and whatnot. So what Longy was telling me was it's such a process that he has to send this thing off, and then, you know, then he has to think about, oh, when can I release it? He was like, he was so stunned that this is so fast, because like, oh, send an MP3, upload it. Oh, it's on a music show. Literally by the end of the day, I think Nathan's first song, Into the Light, which is a beautiful, beautiful song, I published it, posted on Noster and posted everywhere saying, oh, new artist in the Valley Verse, you know, check him out. Great voice. Into the Light, first single. Literally that night he's being played on a music show in America. And it's that kind of wow, like what's just happened. And then like the next morning he's getting sats in his wallet. He's like, what's happened? I'm like, mate. So I'll cut it and I'll like use Fountain's little clip feature, and I'll clip the, because it sounds so cool, you know, having the American accent introducing one of my British guys' song. You know, it just sounds really cool. It sounds like something from a movie. So I'll cut that, you know, like literally the intro or the outro of the song with the, oh, that was Longy with the undercast, blah, 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 you know, what a great song or whatever. And, you know, like I say, it fills them with joy. It fills me with joy. And, you know, there's a problem there we've solved. The next problem is, well, how do we get it out there to more people? And I just think, well, if we can start with Bitcoiners, if Bitcoiners can download Fountain, you can earn Satoshis for listening to your favorite podcasts on Fountain. But there is a category there called music, and you can discover your Taylor Swifts, and you can discover, you know, your Coldplays, and all of these bands exist in the Valueverse. You've just never been allowed to discover them. You've never been allowed to hear them before. Do you know what I mean? So there's a whole, and I think when I first put Longy up, I think there was only about 20, 30 artists on Wav Lake. That's all there was. I think the last count, and this was a few months ago, it's probably updated now, there's about 1,500 artists on there now. And it's everything from electronica to dance music to rap music to rock and roll, R&B, soul. You can get anything you want on there. And the best route into those is through these music shows, because these music shows will create the best. They will curate the best songs. They will put them out there. People get to listen to them. Once you've heard them once or twice, you're like, you're singing along with them. Do you know what I mean? And I'm pleading with every Bitcoiner that's listening to this podcast now, go and download CurioCaster in your browser. There's so many podcast apps. Go to new podcast apps. That pretty much they all do it. Fountain's obviously my favorite. Podverse, Podfans, True Fans. There's so many of them. Go and download one of these modern podcast apps. Go to the music category. Find what the music shows. I'm going to give a shout out. Upbeats is a great one. Sats and Sounds, another one. M2MH, Mountain Music, Happy Hours, another great one.
Boostergram Ball is Adam Curry's, right?
Adam Curry's Boostergram Ball, but I think he's handed the baton on. He's not had a show for about 5 months. So I think, you know, Adam Curry's obviously, he's a specialist in his field, and he's got like a million fans, you know what I mean, on the planet. So when Adam Curry does something, you know, it gets super popular. But there's a lot of these grassroots podcast shows that people are curating. And once again, you know, if you want to set up your own music show, there's people out there that they're so giving, they're so willing to help you with anything you need, whether it's the hosting, whether it's how to create a show. There's videos that are showing people how to do it. So, yeah, so I really want to plead to all of those Bitcoiners, download one of these modern podcast apps, whatever genre of music you're into. Reach out to me as well. I'm on Twitter, BTCSX. Catch up with my feed. And yeah, just give a listen to these, see how this technology works. Of course, the apps, there's cross-app comments as well. You can comment on Fountain, and the artists are going to see it in their wallet along with their boost. Do you know what I mean? Wav Lake as well is a bit more of a, for the artist perspective, is more of a centralized kind of hosting system. It's not as decentralized. With my artist, I've got a bit of both. I've got some on Wav Lake and I've got some in their own, in my own hosting, that I've got my website on and stuff like that. But yeah, if you're a Bitcoiner, just go and listen to these artists. Like I say, your new favorite band is there waiting for you to listen. And yeah, just like I say, just get boosting, you know, get boosting, send in comments, share the value. I want to share this story as well, because this is where the value for value model, I think, come from. It was the first story I heard about it as well, possibly even before Adam Curry implemented it within his business. But Radiohead, you've heard of the band Radiohead, right? Huge band.
I know where you're going with this. In Rainbows, right?
In Rainbows, yeah.
Yes.
This was
my first time doing it too when I was younger. I didn't even realize it. I'm excited to hear your story of this.
Radiohead within Rainbows, their first track, I think, outside of the record company and outside of the music business, they released it as a downloadable MP3 on their website. It was a whole album, and it's a fantastic album as well. It's an amazing album. And they basically said to their fans, it's free. If you want to give us something, give us something. If you don't want to give us anything, don't give us anything. If you don't think it's worth it. And obviously what happened was some people gave them £1. Some people gave them a fiver. Some people gave them £50. Some people gave them £1,000. But fundamentally, they made more money from that record than they made on every other record through a record company put together. So it shows you how valuable this format could potentially be for artists. Now, I know Radiohead, obviously being a huge global band, they'd already gone through the legacy system in order to build up the following and to build up the fan base. And I know that's not going to happen with these artists. But hey, if we can start with Bitcoiners and Bitcoiners getting to listen to this music in the car, like I say, brilliant music. It's much better than stuff that you hear on the radio anyway, you know. You've got to support these artists because and your local artists as well. You know, these are your local musicians, because I don't know what live music. I mean, you're from Seattle, which is the home of grunge, you know, Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Stone Temple Pilots and all of that. It's like, do you know what I mean? It's like Manchester in the UK. It's like so much talent come out of there. Imagine, like, how can that happen again? All you're going to get now is soft, beige, polite, woke rock. You're not going to get anything
like that. Which is totally gatekept by, you know, the same people controlling the government, the politicians. They're also infiltrated into the music labels and industry. So they're only letting certain music out there that promotes a certain narrative. Like you said, 100%. Like even the art has been poisoned by fiat.
100%. When David Bowie was wearing stilettos in the 70s, it was an anti-establishment thing. It was going against all sensibilities of the time. But now when Sam Smith is recreating golden showers and, you know, all this devil worship and Illuminati stuff, like trying to be edgy, trying to be cool, well, he's getting promoted. He's getting put on the front page of the newspaper for that. There's no up in arms. You know, that's not anti-establishment. And we really need to keep music decentralized, because that's the only way the streets can really rant and be angry towards the establishment, is if the music has freedom of speech, freedom of reach, and all of that malarkey. Do you know what I mean? That it can get out there to everyone and no one can stop it. I mean, what are your anti-establishment songs these days that you hear on the radio? You don't hear it. I know they cancelled. Didn't they cancel? Was it Bing Crosby's Baby It's Cold Outside? I might be getting the artist wrong, but they cancelled Baby It's Cold Outside the same week that, is it Cardi B or is it the other one with the wet ass pussy?
I think it's Cardi B. Cardi B.
That was number one. And oh, that's fine. But
insanely ironic.
It is, isn't it? So can you imagine, like, you know, that the establishment want to pollute our young people's minds with all this absolute plastic garbage. And here's us, like our tiny little group of Bitcoiners, doing everything we can to, you know, push the rock and roll metaphor that we all grew up with. My daughter's 18 years old. All the bands she's got on her wall: Sonic Youth, Nirvana, Oasis. She's got rock and roll bands. She's got no one from now. She's not listening to Coldplay. You know, she's not listening to Ed Sheeran. She thinks all that's garbage. Because it's, you know, like all the other stuff, it's just force-fed. Because on every advert, it's on every radio. Every time you turn the radio, they've got the same freaking 20 songs playing all day in this country. Do you know what I mean? And Spotify himself have been found guilty of only pushing artists that the record companies that own Spotify, they're only pushing their own artists. So whenever you land on Spotify homepage or you press random or whatever, you're just going to get all the record company artists. You know, you're never going to get someone like Longing. You know, so... So, yeah, so basically we want Bitcoiners. So the first thing, the whole point of this podcast is to spread that message of start listening to decentralized music, start listening to, you know, your local artists, go and find them. And we've got a first UK music gig powered by Bitcoin happening next month near me in a club called the Fickle Pickle Club, which is a legendary club near us. It's a 200 capacity venue. But the likes of David Bowie have performed there, Thin Lizzy, like back in the 60s and 70s. It's got a long history. And it's my daughter's 18th birthday a couple of weeks ago, and we actually did a live gig there for her 18th party. So we had about 100 odd people come. We had three bands on stage. Longie and Nathan actually were kind enough to kind of lend us their talent and got up on stage. And it was great. It was fantastic. So the venue's a great venue. It's Friday, the 23rd of May. So if there's any Bitcoiners in the UK, if there's any Bitcoiners anywhere in the world that are coming to England in May, come and make it a weekend on the English Riviera, South End, where we are. We've got the longest pleasure pier in the world. It's a mile and a third long. We have got a bit of a beach, but yeah, we've got sea, sun, palm trees, everything you'd find in Miami's here, I suppose, apart from the Whole Foods.
That's amazing, man. Yeah, and I so wish I could be over there for that, because that sounds so cool. I've seen these live streams going on. Like, I'm sure you either watched or heard of the one that was in Austin just a couple months ago.
Yeah.
Tons of people coming through there. Adam Curry was there, like we talked about. He's always helping push this stuff. Ainsley, I actually can't remember which exact artists were there, but a ton of artists came through.
Suzanne Santo, Ainsley. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a great gig. I think they had 7 or 8, but they raised over 5 million sats for the night.
Yeah.
Which
a little bit of that was mine. I was watching online, I was watching the stream, and this is where, you know, the technology comes into it and really just pours rocket fuel on this opportunity for artists, is that when you live stream it, and you're going to be live streaming yours, I know you talked about the one is coming up. So those like myself that can't make the trip to the UK can live stream this show. And as you talked about earlier, when certain artists are playing, it automatically on the back end is switching the wallet that the donations go to. So I can just, if I like the song I'm hearing, I click the zap button and my money goes straight to that person's wallet and they're earning Bitcoin for it. So it just such a cool system for these artists to just, you know, make such a better splash in the world and earn more for it.
100%.
And this is also one of the things I was going to bring up earlier, is we're not just talking about only the artists themselves playing on the stage here. There are opportunities for every kind of person in this new system, where you have the artist who's actually performing, the writers, the sound technicians, the managers, and then you know, all those people, like we talked about, you can split up the zap, so they are all earning as well, and they can actually do a much better job because of that. And there's also just the curators who make those radio stations, like you talked about, that promote these different artists. Or it can be someone, you know, just like myself, who I'm randomly just posting people's cool songs that I found on Noster.
Mm.
And you earn zaps for that too.
Oh, so it's so
just
cool.
Being independent, just like go and just listen to this music and enjoy the music and just share the ones you like, and people will zap you for that because that's valuable to people who are, you know, they want to find this stuff. So single person on every angle of this new system is within this beautiful incentive structure where everyone is rewarded for providing something actually valuable. It's amazing.
And you know what? They're not just rewarded. They're rewarded with the hardest money in the world. And this is what I say to all the artists. Yeah, it's not enough for you to retire on yet, but your kids, do you know what I mean? Who knows? Who knows where we're going to be in 10 years time? You know, who knew that we would reach 100,000 like in 2017 when it was, you know, 2000, do you know what I mean? That's a 50X. But yeah, so for Longy, it's like, look, you can't give up your day job just yet, but hey, if we can get the live stream thing happening, and if we can, I don't know, maybe figure out a tour, and you know, we have been asked to go to the Bitcoin Film Festival in Warsaw. They want him over there, but we're talking with them at the moment, see if that works. You know, a lot of these things are very grassroots level. You know, from the meetups, I know there's Bitcoin Retreat happening in Wales as well. There's loads of these different things happening all over the place, and all these different conferences. It'll be good for the conferences, the people that run these conferences, to get in touch, because I think, like you, we've heard everything that all these Bitcoin hot takes have to say. Do you know what I mean? We've been down the rabbit hole long enough. And I think maybe breaking up some of these conference speeches and these talks with music and with artists, I think is the next, you know, if you want to make a conference like really rock and really make it memorable, maybe start inviting people like Longy, maybe start inviting people like Ainsley Costello to do a gig, to do a set, to maybe do the after party. You know, so then we can show the Bitcoiners, you know, these are real world use cases, and these are the problems it's solving. Over here, there's a lot of musicians that are having to join OnlyFans and sell pictures of their asses just to supplement their tour schedule, because every time they go on tour, they do a UK tour, they come out losing money. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, we don't want that. Like I say, we don't want plastic pop ruling the air. We don't want like Demolition Man, where we're just listening to advert jingles. Do you know what I mean? It was like one of the predictions that the music would just be so terrible in the future and so plastic. It would just be there to sell something. Do you know what I mean? All the time, sell, sell, sell. You know, there's no real social commentary about, you know, lockdowns and anti-establishment rhetoric, and it all came from, you know, it all came from punk movement in the 70s and all stuff like that. And it's like, you know, this is why my daughter's listening to that music now. Do you know what I mean? Because there's nothing like that available today. And you know, it's why like Eminem and Kanye West and all that. It's like, you know, these are multi-millionaire pop stars, and they're I just worry there's not going to be another generation of them standing up to the regime, so to speak, and speaking out. Like, look at COVID. There was only...
I mean, I don't know about Kanye, though. Like, it's funny you mentioned him because his next album is going to be very, very against the narrative. I'm not sure if you followed that.
Oh, no. Yeah, I know. I know Kanye's one of the only ones, isn't he? He's the only one willing to destroy... But, you know, he's willing to destroy his career to do it. 99.9% of these other pop stars, rock stars. I don't know if you saw, I'm a Glastonbury fan. You know, I used to discover all my music on Glastonbury, and I watched it last year. Well, they rolled in his wheelchair Elton John out, who's 80, Debbie Harry, who's 85, you know, Crystal Waters was 80. Dave Grohl, you know, wanted you all to get jabbed to go to his gig. You know, it's not very rock and roll, these people, and it's not very promising, the fact that there's all this talent out there in the Valueverse, but they're not being shown at Glastonbury. It's only a select, you know, it's a very elitist kind of, you know, if you're in with the narrative, you know, if you've never, you know, said that men can't have children, men can't get pregnant, you know, you'll get cancelled. Because that's what happened to a local show around here. We had a folk festival around here, and I think one of the local bands had written a tweet or a Facebook post saying, you know, it's ridiculous, men can't have babies and all that. They got removed from the lineup of the gig.
Madness.
I mean, So this is what, so it's not just the music, it's not just the artist that we're protecting. This is an element of free speech. And I know with you Americans, you know, luckily your constitution allows you to protect that. We don't over here. Someone's just been, have they been sent to jail or found guilty for praying in their head outside of abortion clinic? I don't know if you're aware of that story over here.
I saw that, yeah.
But like crazy. I say, this government of ours are doing everything they can to trigger people. Like, I honestly believe they're trolling us, because this is like the managed decline that the, you know, their puppet masters, you know, want them to oversee, you know. So, like I say, I think music is the lifeblood of everyone. And the music is one of those things that is at that frequency that everybody tunes into. You know, whether you're for freedom of speech or whether you want sound money and whether you want all of this, it's like food. You know, we'll all watch a cooking show if we see something on that, because we're all, you know, we all have to eat, right? Well, music, we all have to consume. And I believe everybody loves music. Doesn't matter what your music, everybody loves music. And I just believe that this is a faster way to orange peel normies than the other method, which is, you know, fear and, you know, central bank.
What the fuck happened in 1971?
CBDCs and, and they're going to, you know, they're coming for you. You know, it's a much easier way. It's like, oh, look, listen to this tune. Oh, how do I listen? Where do I find this music? Well, you can listen to it on Spotify. You can download this app and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, I'm really passionate about this. I really love doing this. And, yeah. Let's see what happens in the future. Hopefully it can just grow and grow and grow and grow.
Super exciting stuff. And I agree with what you said a bit earlier there, where a great next step for, you know, promoting these great value for value artists that are already out there creating would be to make them featured more at the conferences. And last year I was in Nashville and I saw Ainsley Costello and Joe Martin were both at the same show at an after party. It was sort of a satellite event after the day of the conference. And that was super cool. And they had the screens all over the place that showed the live boosts that were being sent in from people in person and people watching the stream at home, which was awesome. And I love that that's happening. But I totally agree with you. Like, the conference itself should be rocking this stuff. It should be in between the panels. They should be bringing it. Yeah, it takes a little bit of work to get all the equipment out and stuff. So it would take a little bit of logistics, but it could totally be doable. And I mean, people would love that. It would add a lot of flavor to it. And I know that there was one year that I went, I believe it was either 2023 or 22. I think it was my second year going to the conference in Miami, but they had the Sound Money Fest, which was like this after party that was like a big music show. And lots of artists came, Deadmau5 and Logic and, you know, some other big name artists were there. And all we have to do is just, you know, use the same idea of having music at the event, but just intertwine it a little bit more and not make it like a separate event. But even if they did want to keep it separated, like an after thing, you know, there are definitely ways they could boost it more and really help everyone involved, which would be super cool.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer for me because, like, I've been to a lot of these exhibitions, not necessarily Bitcoin conferences, but, you know, in my industry, you do a lot of these industry exhibitions and stuff, and it's always the stuff with live performance that people gravitate towards, you know. There's only so many Michael Saylor engineering analogies that one can cope with, you know, at one of these things, and, you know, he's a legend and all that, but... You know, I think to break it up like that and to highlight these, you know, these super talented artists, I think that's definitely the way forward. And it will give people a lot of it would enable people to see Bitcoin working in real life. And I think when people see it work, they see the magic. They go, "What? That's gone from my phone straight to you with, you know, no one in between." Like, yeah, that's instantly
one button press
across the world. Straight into that person's wallet. You know, it's people have to see the magic. If you want to orange peel someone, yeah, you've got to show them how it works, and you've got to let them witness the magic.
You know. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think that's a great way to sort of start wrapping things up here, just so the people listening can just go out there and just start doing this and start listening to these songs and participating. And I wanted to give a shout out to your website too, which I didn't as much earlier, but the BitcoinEssex.co.uk is an amazing resource that you put together here. It's got, you know, tabs for Bitcoin for retailers, as you were talking about earlier, how, you know, restaurants and any small businesses can plug this in.
Yeah.
You've got resources on how to buy Bitcoin, learn about Bitcoin, earn Bitcoin, meetups, videos and podcasts, everything. And yeah. So this is definitely for more people than just folks that are in Essex. But if you're like in Essex, or around England, I would say, like, definitely check this out. This is like a great UK resource where you can, you know, start building those meetups in that area for sure. But I mean, just tons of great stuff there. So I'll definitely put the link to that in the description box, well as Wave Lake and Fountain and these other resources you've shared that are a good place to start. And I guess to wrap it up, Aaron, what's your closing message to the folks out there? Wherever they may be, like, we've got listeners who will be wanting to consume this art and get involved in value for value. And I'm sure there will be artists that want to produce art for value for value. What is your elevator pitch to this whole community of art lovers? Why they need to get involved in this? Why they should, you know, really put this on their calendar to, like, stop procrastinating and build the future? Because all the artists hate Spotify. Even the people that are sort of consuming on Spotify know that the artists are getting screwed, and they think there would probably be a better way to do this, to find new content that's much better that they've never seen, because they've just been stuck in this gatekept world of, you know, only what the music label wants to see. So
100%.
Share your final thoughts.
So my final thought really is, yeah, go and seek out your local Bitcoin meetup, because that will help keep your sanity and it will help you hodl as well. Because I'd like to think that our Telegram group, you know, during some of the harshest bear markets, it's, you know, reiterating some of, you know, Andreas Antonopoulos videos and saying, you know, when there's blunt, this is when you buy, you don't sell, do blah, blah, blah. And all that. So I'd like to think that if you find your Bitcoiners in real life, that's a real eye-opener and it's a real game-changer, because you can meet people which are aware, you that are on the same plane as you. You know, you can see all the fear, and it enables you to have, it enables you to elevate the small talk to medium and hard talk almost straight away, knowing that you're not going to offend anyone. So there's that. So find your local meetup. But whatever you're passionate about, whatever your skill set is, find a way to do it in Bitcoin. Even if you're a woodworker, you're a carpenter, you make little tables, you know, there's Pleb Market now. You can sell your stuff on there, which is like eBay on Nostra. You can sell stuff. In fact, I'm selling the tickets for our gig next month on there. You can buy the tickets for the Valueverse, into the Valueverse show on there. But yeah, whatever your passion is, you know, even if it's artwork, even if it's drawing, even if it's electronics, you know, putting together, who knows, sculptures, whatever your passion is, find out how you can link it to Bitcoin. and amazing things will happen. When passion and incentive collide, amazing things happen. It's happened to me. It's clearly happened to you, and it's happened to every single Bitcoin around here. So I'm not saying, you know, give up your day job. Just do your day job, but whatever you love to do in your spare time, figure out a way that you can sell that and get paid in Bitcoin for it. Because there's three ways to get Bitcoin. You can mine it, you can buy it, and you can earn it. And it's so much more satisfying earning it, because you know that 100 Satoshis today could be worth, you know, a lot of money in the future, you know. So that really, so first step, meet Bitcoiners in real life. Go out your way, if necessary, to meet them in real life. Check out all the new bands, figure out what your passion is, try and figure out how you can make money from it using Bitcoin. Even if it's t-shirt design, even, I know one of our guys, he's a roofer. Oh, and the other thing in our Telegram chat as well, what I forgot to say is as well, everyone in my Telegram chat, they're all, so I've got people from hairdressers, obviously, like me, makeup artists, carpenters, window fitters, plasterers, kitchen fitters, they're all willing to work for Bitcoin, which is the other amazing thing. So yeah, when you get in your like local community, try and figure out a way that you can get everyone together and yeah, share skill sets basically and reward each other in Bitcoin. I generally tend to only spend Bitcoin with people that I love. You know, I don't want to waste it on Bill Gates or, you know, the big corporate. I don't want to give it to them. You know, I don't want to. So yeah, that's my heartfelt plea that goes out to you all. Yeah, just get involved. Figure out what you can do and just get involved. Like for me, I've earned a few quid cutting hair. I take my kit to a lot of the conferences that happen in the UK, and they're not big ones. They're very grassroots. Probably 70, 80 people go. There was one at a football ground last year. There was one at a Bitcoin Adventure, which happened at this wildlife park. I just take my hair kit there and I offer haircuts for Bitcoin and people pay me in Bitcoin. And like I say, that 50 quid or how much, I think at the time I earned 1 million sats at a show I did. And it was, I think at the time, I think it might have been worth around about £200. I wasn't charging a lot. I was charging like £15, I think, for kids and 30 quid. But I was cutting hair from 8 in the morning till 10 o'clock at night because everybody wanted to participate. Everyone wanted to take part in it. And anyway, so that 1 million sats then, you know, I don't know, it's worth 3-4 times more than when I earned it. Do you know what I mean? And that's the other beautiful thing with Bitcoin as well. You get paid for stuff you do in Bitcoin forever. And that's a concept that melts most normies' brains. So yeah.
It's a very powerful feeling. And I couldn't agree more with just using Nostr no matter what you're interested in, what your passion is. Even if you don't have a passion yet, just join Nostr and start shooting zaps around and posting memes or anything you want, because that's the completely open playground where you can just create and share anything and people will just send you zaps for it. And that's where you can create an audience, whether you're an artist or, you know, a YouTuber that makes videos about building and fixing stuff, you know, like anything that will provide value to others. It's a great place to figure out what people are looking for. If you just put your stuff out there, and it's a great barometer for how much value you're providing, and instantly set up shop as a business right there. And you're going to be earning sats right out of the gate. And it's just an amazing place to get started. And so excited about all these new people that will be coming. And I'm excited for my listeners to hear more about this and check out all the work that you're doing over there at Bitcoin Essex. Aaron, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you today. I wasn't expecting this to be a 2-hour plus one, but there's so much good stuff to talk about. And I want to do another episode in the future, so we'll have to keep in touch. There's definitely way too much to talk.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'd love to. Yeah, once you get me going, mate, I can't stop. Do you know what I mean? It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me. Lots of love from the UK over the pond to you guys over there. And I hope you all have a wonderful, wonderful year.
Hanging out the back of the field, oh. watch the film stars being snapped by paparazzi. Oh Lord, I am. Got shame. The shame is all. From the corners of this glitter I watch the city pose as I stand still cold. Oh Lord, are you there? This place is alive like some Hitchcock scene, a carousel. Come on.